Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast. I am your host, Matt Rossi. With me this week are my two fantabulous co-hosts, Liz Harper and Joe Perez. Hey, guys.
Hi.
I'm trying to get my computer to open the email. So in the meantime, while I'm trying to get it to do that thing. Oh, there it did it. It did it behind me. Tricky, tricky program. We're just talking about artificial intelligence and you've just decided to spite me. So, yeah, while that's happening, what have you all been doing?
Baldur's Gate, breaking Baldur's Gate, finding new things in Baldur's Gate, and building a deck that I for Magic. That's a my favorite character in Magic, riding a giant demon frog, because why not?
Indeed. Liz?
I was trying to log on this morning to try out the Kalimdor Grand Prix, but my timing was off and downtime today, so I haven't played it, but I needed to. Other than that, I'm still stuck on Diablo. I have made a lot of progress, but I'm like chipping away at the new season.
Yeah, I've had my issues with the season, which is why one of the things I mentioned in our email, the heading thing up front where we tell people stuff. In fact, let's just talk about that stuff now rather than having me
ramble on. Let's just talk about stuff.
First off, a couple of things from Diablo 4 I want to mention. I should actually really fast throw in the usual, the Amazon Prime Gaming stuff that you can get. The Silver Pig is up from Amazon Prime if you've got a WoW account. It's the Silver Pig non-combat pet until next Wednesday, which is August 23rd. August is nearly over.
I don't know how that happened. It just happened.
Yeah. These months just keep happening. Oh my God. Also, over tomorrow, if you're listening to us live, over tomorrow, if you're listening to us recorded sometime earlier this week, the Overwatch Reinhardt conductor skin went away. It was going till August 16th for Overwatch 2. So, there you go.
I will say they usually come up with a new skin like shortly after or immediately after one goes away. So if you're listening to this after it's gone, there's probably something new there.
Yeah, probably. There's also the epic card that they've been giving you for Hearthstone. That's available until the 22nd of August, which is again next week.
Which is also really close. How did that happen?
I don't know. It keeps happening. It's very irritating. I just bear. Although on the other hand, if it didn't keep happening, I would forever be waiting for games to come out that never would.
That's true.
It's got good and bad aspects. But in addition to all that, you can also get four tier skips for the battle pass in Diablo 4 using various things, basically watching videos this is Amazon Prime. This is Amazon Prime.
Yeah, that's another Amazon Prime.
Sign up, connect up, boom, you got it. That's going until September 6th.
So the day Baldur's Gate comes out for console.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't check. I saw that there was a Baldur's Gate thing, but I didn't look at what it was. More family. But as far as I could tell, I went to Twitch and there's still no Twitch drops for any Blizzard games.
I bet there will be some when patch 10.1.7 comes out. They seem to to push a lot when patches show
up. Yeah, and that's this next month, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
September, it's just around the corner. It's in like 2 weeks. Everything is in just like 2 weeks.
Yep. Continuously in a cycle of next week or the week after. It's constantly.
September 5th is 10.1.7. 2 weeks away, or is that 3 weeks away? How does time work? I don't know.
It's a little bit more than 2 weeks because we got 2 weeks left in August.
That's since
the 15th today.
So that probably means it's 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's 3 weeks.
We're writers. We're not mathematicians.
Yeah, I was just complaining in the pre-show that, you know, the worst thing about Dungeons & Dragons was math. And that, you know, I was upset because if you have a computer running the game, why can't it do the math for me so I don't have to? Because, you know, I'm one of those people. But regardless of all that, we should point out that one of the things I wanted to talk about the most is because I thought it was fascinating. Diablo 3, their season 29 PTR is up. It's up as of today, and it will be for the next 2 weeks. And I was not expecting this significant a season for Diablo 3. Maybe I should have realized that they were going to continue. Like, season 28 was huge.
Yeah, they surprised us last season with just a huge content dump. So,
yeah. So I was somewhat surprised that in season 29, not only are we getting like a new mechanic of sorts, we're also getting a revamp of the Paragon system where they put a Paragon cap in. That's now like a ceiling where it's 800 Paragon levels. Some people are going to be annoyed. Some people are going to be like, you know, okay, it didn't really affect me anyway. But it's still interesting to see them do it. And they changed the way it works so that you can only put 200 points in each of the various categories. Like there's the offense, defense, utility, and I always forget the fourth one, but there's four of them. And it used to be that like you could get points in them until you'd filled all four things in a category. And then there were two categories that just never could be filled because they were like strength and constitution or dexterity or intellect or what have you. They were whatever your main primary attacking, you know, ability was and stamina so you didn't die. And now they've decided, no, we're not doing any of that. Instead, there are still four things within a category, but you can put 200 points in any one of those things. Each of those four things, you can go up to 200 in it, but you can only put 200 points in the entire category.
Hmm.
So you can have like one, you could just say, I want to just front load gold find and put gold find 200 points in gold find, or you could put like 75 points in gold find, 25 points in something else, and then like 50 in two others. You can decide where you're going to put these, but the hard limit for a stat is 200 and the hard limit for a category is 200 and there's 800 total points. And this is of course just on the PTR. They haven't decided how they're going to implement it when it goes live. That's the whole point of testing it. They want to see if it works or if it's too regressive or repressive or what have you. I just find this fascinating that they decided to do this now, like a major Paragon revamp. I mean, on the one hand, it's probably the best time possible, but at the same time, it's like very surprising.
Does this feel to y'all more like, it feels a little like Diablo 4. Diablo 4 also really limits your Paragon. You only have so many Paragon points. There are limits and walls here. You can't level forever or get everything you ever wanted.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, I definitely feel like the Diablo 4 design philosophy has leached back into Diablo 3.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
But
we kind of talked about that before. That seems like that was always going to happen.
Well, season 28 very much felt like it was Diablo 4 inspired. Like the way that it was the special talents and abilities you could get with the new system, it felt like another Paragon system. So it's not tremendously surprising to me that they're doing this. I am surprised that they didn't just make that system permanent, you know, but they didn't. As far as I know, it's not returning in Diablo season 29.
The interesting thing, though, for me is that Diablo 3 is getting still as much development time as it is with Diablo 4 out. And I'm curious, I'm wondering how many people are still playing Diablo 3 that aren't going to Diablo 4.
I think at least some people are because...
Oh, there has to be. There has to be a significant number.
Well, the other thing is that they also have introduced in this season something called solo self-found mode, which is when you start a seasonal character, you can make that character hardcore or non-hardcore, or you can make that character solo self-found and hardcore, or just solo self-found, or just hardcore. And if you make them solo self-found, you can't group. Like, you are playing this game solo. You can't group up with anybody. You can't form a party. You can't do any group activities. You are playing the game alone. And it's specifically for season characters, I think in part because it just wouldn't really work for non-season characters. This is basically, I think they even say it's one of the reasons that they're introducing the changes they are, is because they want the game, they want there to be challenge for players who are going into it doing just the solo season play. And it's odd for Diablo, but it really shouldn't be, because I mean, when I played the original Diablo and Diablo 2, I played them entirely alone. I never even thought about grouping with people.
Yeah.
But I've gotten so used to grouping with people in Diablo that I sort of forgot that ever existed, and now suddenly they're reminding me. There's even going to be a different leaderboard just for people playing solo self-found. I don't know why it's called solo self-found, quite frankly. That's a weird name. They should come up with a different name for it. But yeah, it's got its own leaderboard. It's got, you know, no group activities. It's basically, I don't want to say it's turning Diablo 3 into a roguelite, because I don't think it is, but it definitely feels inspired by games like Hades. Or Dead Cells, maybe Dead Cells more than Hades, quite frankly.
No, this feels like Hades. This feels like Hades Heat Runs, like where you can up the difficulty, but you're, you know, basically by yourself. Which can include like turning off boons and things like that. This feels in line with that. I think you're right.
Yeah, all right, I'll take it. But yeah, that's all going on for Diablo 3 season.
What about the season theme?
It's so interesting, because what happens is, starting at level 1, when you're out in the world killing demons, as you kill demons, the demons, like, for lack of a better word, evil juice gets everywhere and corrupts the land. And if you kill enough demonic things, there's a chance for a diabolical fissure to spawn. And that basically takes you into another plane of existence, like a realm called the Vision of Enmity. I can never pronounce enmity. Is it enmity or enmity? Enmity. I know it's spelled enmity, my brain doesn't want to pronounce that. But you go to that realm, and you basically fight even harder demons, because there's multiple affixes. I don't know if all three affixes applied at once or not, but there's the enervating affix, which creates an area of effect around the monster that reduces the player's movement speed by 65% and cooldown reduction by 50% if the player is in the vicinity of the monster. Necrotic, the player's healing is reduced by 65%. Monsters have a damage over time effect that deals 180% of the player's maximum health over 30 seconds. This effect is removed if the player is healed above 95%. And Resource Leech, hitting a player removes 65% of their maximum resource. You were talking about Diablo 4?
Mm-hmm.
That's Diablo 4.
Does that sound a little bit like Malignant, where you find it?
Yeah.
Kill these corrupted things, and then you find a malignant and you kill it, and then you have to cage its heart and kill another more difficult one.
It's similar to that, except in this case you go into this weird realm, so it's kind of like I don't remember the word that we used, malignant tunnels. It's like the malignant tunnels, except here's the weird part about diabolical fissures, which also, by the way, sounds like something bad that you're getting told about by your doctor.
Yeah.
But when you're in the fissure killing demons, they can spawn another fissure inside the fissure. So you can just keep going to new realms. It's very much like a Nephilim or greater. It's like a Nephilim rift, but without the knowing for sure when it will happen. It's just random. Like, I killed enough demons. Boom. There's another fissure. I get to go into that one. And you're basically just doing this continuously. It's like, wow, this is weird. And the idea that you could basically be like 10 visions deep, it's like, how do I get out of here? Do I port? Like, you know, do I just go home? Like, what, town portal? Like, what do I do? Is there a way out? Does this thing finish at some point, or do I just keep going? You know, we're now 20 fissures deep. Can they continue? So yeah, that's the mechanic. That's the theme in action, so to speak.
Interesting.
And it's just like, this is a lot for season 29 of the previous Diablo game. You know what I mean? Like, it almost feels as thought out, if not more thought out, than Diablo 4 season 1 was. And that's surprising to me. Like, I don't know how you guys feel about season one. I feel a little underwhelmed.
I am definitely underwhelmed.
Yeah. I think season one is fine.
I'm not saying it's bad.
Yeah, yeah. The problem with season one is that Blizzard has created this magnificent single-player story-driven RPG. I know it's a multiplayer, a shared persistent universe, but it has this single-player story campaign where you go through it and it feels, it's a really hard-hitting story. It's a great story. And as you're playing through that campaign, you play most of it alone. You play most of it in instanced content with these story moments. And now in a season, you're starting a whole new character and everyone's treating you like you're some giant hero because you finished the campaign on your other character. And it just feels weird. It feels weird. Blizzard is trying to cram Diablo 3 seasons into a completely different style of game. Diablo 4 is almost nothing like Diablo 3. This game is such a departure for the Diablo universe because of this big story-driven campaign with... I think it's an astounding Diablo game, but it's so different. And they've taken... For seasons, they've just cut and paste from Diablo 3, and it doesn't feel right.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you. And I'm fine with the idea of having seasons in Diablo 4. Like, obviously, like, even though it's a different type of game, like, the concept is fine, but the execution is, it's lacking quite a bit because it's not taking into consideration the fact that it is a different game. I agree with you. It feels like they are trying to make the Diablo 3 seasons work in Diablo 4 more than they're trying to make a pure Diablo 4 season system, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a part of the problem there, to piggyback off what you're saying, the problem I have with it at least, is that they did that without really considering, like, they made the story thing not part of the regular, you don't get any of the story stuff if you're not playing the season. And the story stuff itself is actually not bad.
Yeah.
And it's even dramatically tied into what's going on.
Yeah.
So it should be in the regular non-season. You should still be able to see those quests.
That's what sort of ticked me off a little bit about it was, like, the fact, one, that it's a completely separate character that you have to make for it, which in this style of game seems weird. But two, like, the fact that it has some decent story, but it forces you to sort of remove your main character from that to get it done. It feels weird.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is the problem there. But, whether or not we think there's a problem there, it is still surprising to see this much work going to season 29, especially when we were told they were pretty much done in development, that they were going to go into kind of a maintenance mode. If this is their idea of a maintenance mode.
Well, we have been told that season 29 is their last season where it's going to be a brand new original thing. I think all of us looked at season 28 and thought, wow, this is so big. There's so much going on here. They've added so much. This is like the swan song. This is the season they're going out with. But actually, it's season 29 is kind of the swan song. This is what they're going out with. This is their last big season. And Diablo 3 will continue to have seasons, but they're going to be remakes. You know, they're going to do reruns. They're going to do old seasons, or they're going to mix up season themes. So it's going to keep going. There are going to still be interesting things. Maybe some old favorites like treasure goblins.
If they could basically just put treasure goblins in it all the time, and I would be just completely happy.
Just quadruple treasure goblins. That's the season. That's it. But so this is going to be the last big season. This is kind of the big bang before they really do go into maintenance. I think that's after this we're hitting maintenance mode for real.
I don't know. I'm just getting the feeling like they'll do that, and then, you know, so season 30, a bunch more stuff, and, like, you know, guys, are you ever going to actually do maintenance mode, or are you just going to keep teasing us with it?
Of course, that actually, maybe that depends. Maybe if they get a bazillion players super excited about season 29, they're going to be like, maybe we should put some development time into season 30.
What they should do is put the Nephilim in Diablo 4. I want to know what happened to them.
Diablo 3 is still a very different game from Diablo 4. Oh, yeah,
absolutely. I think your point about the way that Diablo 4 is, you didn't say these words, but I'm going to say them. Diablo 4 is a much more comprehensive story. mm-hmm. than Diablo 3. And it's one tinged with loss and regret. And I believe one of the things that both you and Joe were saying that is that Sanctuary really feels like a realized character in Diablo mm-hmm. 4. And I feel like that's one of the biggest problems I have with the season in Diablo 4 is that it doesn't capitalize on that.
I feel
like it really should have been the focus.
It kind of tries to with, I mean, there's certainly a pathos to Cormund's story, but it doesn't feel all encompassing. Like in the original story campaign, it's this threat that is looming, coming in from you from all sides. And it doesn't have that weight. So I think the season has failed. It's hard to say failed because I think it's perfectly acceptable content for what it is. But in a way, it has failed because both it doesn't hit hard enough on the story element. It has these story elements that are supposed to be a significant draw to the season because you can't play them anywhere else at any other time. The season's going to end mid-October, and after that, these are gone. Unless they change their mind and add them to the main game, but these should be gone after that. And so it doesn't have a story that is hard hitting enough to feel like Diablo 4. And yeah, also,
it does definitely have that disconnect. It doesn't even necessarily feel like Diablo 3 seasons to me. It feels like they took Diablo 3 seasons and tried to make them Diablo 2 latter season. And instead what you have is not anything. But I, when I'm saying these things, it's not that I think it's bad and I don't hate it. I'm just not as excited by it as I wanted to.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's weird.
One of the real things, real problems I've had with season one is that I go in and play, and I'm playing a necromancer. I was playing originally. I'm playing another necromancer I'm kind of trying to be different, but I log on and play, and I find that I really wish I were playing my original necromancer. Mm-hmm. Because I still have levels to get, still have gear I want to get. I was getting this super weird build that was based on barrier generation. Just needed to find a specific legendary that boosted my damage when I had barrier, and it was going to be insane. I was so close. But instead, I'm playing a new necromancer in a new season who has no gear, nothing to start with, and like I haven't had the chance to build this character into anything really cool and fun and satisfying.
Yeah.
I just log on and I'm like, wow, I really wish I were my other character, but I can't because I'm doing the seasonal stuff. But well, actually, I do think the Malignant Hearts are really neat and they unlock some cool new combinations.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But even so, I feel like, wow, I wish I could do this with my old character with this very particular set of gear and legendaries and abilities, because that would be neat. It would be neat to add that in, but I can't unless I collect a whole new set of the same legendaries and uniques and so on and so forth, which I don't know.
Yeah, we also know that they've recently patched the game to increase mob density and increase things in Nightmare to make it more fun to try and level. And I included an article from IGN talking about the Domhain tunnels in Skazglen, or as the players who are using them are calling them, the dopamine tunnels. And apparently mob density in this one dungeon is so high, and it's got a plan that's so suitable for this, that people are leveling from like 1 to 40 in 2 hours. Like you can go in there on a level 1 character and you can be level 40 within 2 hours. They're just gathering up all the mobs, burning them down, going back outside and resetting. And I mean, that's because of changes Blizzard made. Blizzard are the ones who made the changes recently to finish every class. Every class got buffed after the big nerfing of the beginning of the season. And this isn't me going, this is just to be stopped. In fact, I'm actually curious what this means in terms of the way Diablo 4 leveling works. Because I feel like Diablo 4 leveling, it is a completely different animal than any previous Diablo game. I mean, it's definitely the first one. This wasn't even a concern for that. Diablo 2, just like its approach to leveling was almost as an afterthought. Like you played Diablo 2 and then you got to the end and you saw the story and now you go back and you play more Diablo 2. You basically play the same stuff over and over again, trying to get that right. You know, I'm going to kill Bale until he drops the thing I want. Diablo 3 brought in Paragon. But it brought in Paragon after it had gone from like a level 60 game to a level 70 game with the expansion. And then they brought in, did they have Paragon before the expansion or did they bring it in after? I can honestly not remember.
I can't remember. Yeah. It's literally been a decade.
Yeah, so. It's been a long road getting from there to here. But our time is finally here, so we should talk about it now. I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm doing this. I haven't even watched Enterprise recently. Look, getting back to it. one of the things that I keep thinking about is like, is this basically, I'm just going to ask you guys, is leveling okay? Mm-hmm. Like is leveling in Diablo 4, does it seem like split up to you? Like there's a real hard noticeable break between this is fun and I'm doing an easy thing with my friends and oh my God, please just one more level. I need to get to sleep. Like, or is this me? Is this an old person problem? Or is this just I don't have the 27 hours to play this game?
No, it is the children who are wrong.
I hate to break it to you. I think we may all be old people.
Yeah.
Yeah. But is that the problem? Like, is that the problem with leveling?
There is a part in leveling where I want to say it was like early 40s, maybe mid 40s. Where it starts to feel extra grindy. Otherwise, I think the leveling experience is, it's not bad. It definitely incentivizes you and definitely does the whole thing of player engagement where it's like, yes, we want you to keep playing the game, but it's tied so much with the story that I kind of wish the leveling experience capped when the story was done. Like it doesn't, like you still have a couple levels to grind out after that and things to do.
It's like the main story campaign is designed to sort of span levels 1 through 50. Yes. And there are 50 more levels after that.
Yes.
Which,
yeah, I think it's those levels that feel bolted on to me.
Yeah. Like, again, that feels like a Diablo 3 hits Diablo 4 thing, because Diablo 3 had a very kind of limited story campaign, in my personal opinion. And, you know, you just played the game. You went out and killed demons, killed this boss, killed that boss, jumped from thing to thing and did whatever you want. But you're basically just killing demons. So Diablo 4 has this killer story campaign, levels 1 to 50. And then it's like suddenly you jump into Diablo 3 where all you're doing is just killing whatever demons that are in front of you. And it feels like a weird mismatch. It was definitely around level 50 that it started to feel like, okay, this is really a slog. This is taking forever and I'm not getting better gear. And it just felt really exhausting. I was probably like maybe into the 70s before it started feeling good again, maybe mid 60s. So it took a while to get over that hump.
Yeah,
I think part of it is because they very clearly expected Nightmare Dungeons to be the thing carrying you. And they're fun and all, but it took me a real long time to get into Nightmare Dungeons. Mm-hmm. Because as you pointed out, I wasn't getting any better gear for a long time.
Well, not only that, but they don't exactly lay that out, too. Like, Nightmare Dungeons are not intuitive in the slightest. So yeah,
they're very easy to ignore.
Yes, exceptionally.
Very, very easy to ignore, because you have no idea. Like, it took me a long time to realize all these things I had clogging up my bank were actually useful. Like, I could use these things to go to Nightmare Dungeons. Like, oh, is that why they exist? So, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, the other thing is there is not as much randomness in Diablo 4 as there is in Diablo 3. Are y'all feeling the same thing? Because you go to a Diablo 4 dungeon, and there are, like, so many templates for the dungeon to have. And they follow very specific patterns and, you know, they can be very predictable. They aren't exactly the same over and over again, but they can be real predictable. And there are only so many settings. I do sometimes feel a little tiny bit like I'm playing Dragon Age 2 and I'm going into the same cave over and over and over and over and over.
I also think I noticed is that what you said, I have noticed, but I've also noticed that, like, sometimes you get to the end of a dungeon and you have no idea why that thing is there.
Yeah.
Like, hi, Blood Bishop. It's you again. I didn't know you were involved in this dungeon.
There's also a really limited number of bosses. You see the Blood Bishop a lot in a lot of places over and over again.
Like, I mean, he's in dungeons that are very tangentially related to the whole blood bishoping thing. I feel like you're just here because they like you're on a club and you just, this is your week to be the dungeon guy. I don't know what's happening.
Listen, it's a part of a union. We're not supposed to say anything bad about it. They're doing their thing, and it's just his time in the rotation. They have to split it. It's an on-call. It's fine.
And there's like some like the Khazra abomination where it's like this thing is literally like the most generic end boss that Diablo 4 has. Diablo 4 has some really cool weird stuff.
Yeah.
Like, there's some fights that you like when you do them, you're like, wow, this was really weird and crazy. And then there's the Khazra abomination. It's like, oh, a big Khazra who's going to poop green stuff on me for this entire fight. Yay. He's back. He's the Khazra that I didn't want to see again.
Like while playing through the campaign, you encountered some really interesting boss encounters, and all of them were different. Every one of them was different. Like going in and trying to kill Vinard in the beginning, which I felt like was one of the big setbacks when you were first playing. You would get to Vinard and that's your first kind of really big challenging boss, and you had to completely rethink sometimes how you were playing because this was very different. Late game Diablo 4 does not have any of that. It's like, okay, there are a dozen different bosses you might find in a dungeon, and there are a dozen different affixes to random it up in a nightmare dungeon. But you're doing the same thing over and over with very little variety. Not as much variety as the campaign had by a long shot. And you can't go back and do the campaign. You can't repeat the campaign on a higher difficulty level. Once you're done with the campaign, it's done. It's gone forever. So you can't go back and do that content that was really interesting and compelling again. And that feels, you're right. The last 50 levels feel kind of bolted on. It's just go back and keep playing, but you can't do any of the interesting stuff anymore. No. You've already done that.
Yeah, like I mean, I'm surprised that they haven't even just straight up lifted the bosses from the various campaign stuff. Like
that it would work. Some of those were great encounters.
Like have Duriel show up again. Why? No reason. We just need something else to fight that isn't a Khazra pooping on you all the time. The floating lich boss with the chains and the walls, like, he doesn't show up too much, but he shows up enough that I'm like, why are you in a completely different cave halfway across the world, man? I just got done fighting you over in the Fractured Peaks. Now you're in Chaldeum? Like, do you have a tunnel? How did you get here this fast? Is this what you, when I win, do you just immediately run until the next dungeon? I mean, seriously, buddy, this is weird. So yeah, this is us talking about stuff we'd like to see improved. It's not necessarily us saying it's bad, because it isn't bad.
I have put so many hours into Diablo 4, it's not funny. It's not funny how much time I put into this game. I enjoy it, but also,
I do think that making the campaign playable again at a higher difficulty level is absolutely a good idea. Like, it would be so much nicer if I could just keep doing the campaign again.
Yeah.
You know?
The campaign was so interesting and so fun, and even gameplay-wise, a lot of the dungeons, a lot of the encounters were just more interesting than what you get afterwards. I will say this though,
the Vinard fight, oh my god. You know the part where Nerel cries out in anguish, Mother, I don't want you to die. I am incapable. I am physically incapable of not saying, I do. I want you to die. Just so we're clear, I absolutely want you to die because I want this fight to stop.
It's so rough. It's so rough. And it's such a detailed, complicated encounter with multiple phases. We've seen fights like that in Warcraft. We have done raid encounters like that. We have spent hundreds and hundreds of pulls figuring out raid encounters like that. And, you know, we go back and do it every week. So it feels weird to go into Diablo. It's like, okay, you did that once. You can never, ever see it again. It's gone. It's done. Old news.
On another Diablo 4 related subject, though, since we've kind of talked about the leveling and dopamine tunnels and so forth, they've also, I don't know if it's still stopped, but they had suspended trading as of today because there was a duping exploit that people had figured out. Because, you know, game players, the second there's a way to break the game and get yourself things you want, it's going to happen.
Ah, yes. I remember sitting in Diablo 2 cloning Staff of Jordans for hours.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it is just how game players are.
That really is a tale as old as time.
But one of the things about it that I thought was kind of interesting is that in order to stop it, they had to literally suspend all trade. Mm. Like, you cannot trade stuff to other people in Diablo 4. It's already limited. You can't trade legendaries and you can't trade unique items. But now, with trading stopped entirely, does it actually matter that it's stopped? I mean, really, what do you trade anyway? You don't trade all that much stuff in the game in the first place.
I mean, legendaries and uniques, that's kind of, you hit a point in the game and that's all you care about. And you already can't trade that stuff.
Yeah, so not having the ability to trade now, okay. It's not like the auction house exists in this particular game.
Is this just like a gold farm, maybe, where you're cloning something that sells for a lot? And
it was basically
you're super rich, I guess.
Yeah, it was basically item and gold stuff, mostly gold stuff. It was basically rare stuff that you can make into legendaries. You know how you can basically trade up you know, you can do that. So it was the rare stuff that has the stats people want so that they can use, they can make them legendary.
Yeah, true, true.
But there were also, I'm not really sure how the new treasure goblins had to do with it. They mentioned it in the article, but they don't say anything about how it worked. Quite frankly, I'm not surprised that they don't tell you how it works. You know, writing an article, Blizzard, you know, trading, there's a dupe exploit. This is what it is usually not how that goes. But regardless, that's something that happened in Diablo 4 this week, so I figured we should mention it. At this point, though, we've talked a lot about Diablo, so I'd like to mention the fact that Hearthstone Battlegrounds Season 5 is next week, the 22nd of August.
Which, so, they announced this today, and it's already next week. I'm actually really hyped for this one. Battlegrounds is my favorite Hearthstone game mode. We all know that Hearthstone is 10 games in a trench coat.
Yeah, it probably loses more. People and get new people. Yeah. This week, this gameplay mode will be the leg.
But yes, Battlegrounds is an auto battler. It is also completely free to play. It's not like you don't need to buy cards, you don't need to have a collection. I frankly love the way you can jump in and out of Battlegrounds, because with constructed Hearthstone, it's like, okay, there's an expansion and this is really cool, except I still have to collect all the right cards, and then I have to figure out how to build a deck, or I have to find a deck that has cards I have. And so I like Hearthstone expansions. They're super interesting. They shake the game up. But I really love Hearthstone Battlegrounds because I can just jump in and play and figure it out as I go. I don't need to build a deck. I don't need to. I can just play the game. There's nothing in between me and the game. I go and play the game. And this season is adding something called anomalies, which at the beginning of the match, there will be a certain anomaly that's present for the match. So they've given us only a few examples of what anomalies can be. One of them would be start at 10 gold. Currently, you start at you start at 3 gold, which is just enough to buy your first minion. You get 4 gold next turn and 5 gold, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you started at 10 gold, that's going to completely change how your early turns are going to go. You'll be able to go faster, and matches will be completely different. One of them is all heroes are Sire Denathrius, which I would be happy to never see that guy again, but that's also going to completely change the game.
Wait, the strategy on both sides?
So it's an 8v8 where you you gradually eliminate everyone.
There's 8 players, and one of them has Sire Denathrius?
I said that wrong. There's 8 players in total, and you match off and match off until there's only one remaining.
Okay. So
yeah, words. I got it. I'm good at this.
All of the players will have nothing to Sire Denathrius for them.
Yeah. Hit. Yeah.
You know, honestly, that probably wouldn't bother me so much I don't know why, ever since I saw Sire Denathrius the first time, I always thought that in an alternate universe, he'd be voiced by Tim Curry.
With that.
Certainly
I would have liked
him
better.
Tim Curry impression. Yeah, that's
the most interesting anomaly they announced, though, was one that gives the tavern a 7th tier. Currently, there are 6 tavern tiers, and as you play the game, you buy new tavern tiers, and each tavern tier has better, more powerful minions. So there is one anomaly that will add a tavern tier 6, where you can go into and buy all new minions that we've never seen before that are more powerful than anything else in the game, which that sounds like a lot to add for what is just a single anomaly in what is apparently going to be a lot of possible anomalies you can get into. There are going to be 20 anomalies, and it may be increased, and they may add them and switch them around. So we'll see. I'm really interested in this Tavern Tier 7 and the stuff we're going to get to it. The funny thing about Tavern Tier 7 is, like, all of the minions have a number of stars in the upper left corner of the card. And it's like there's the art is designed for 6 stars to fit there. And so they kind of like added a 7th that's kind of over, that's overlapping the border. And it's like, I see what you're doing there. I see what you're trying real hard to add this visual distinction. And it doesn't quite work, but A for effort.
Someone I'm sorry. I'm still thrown about the Sirens and Athreus. That's so much Sirens and Athreus. But since you mentioned it earlier, Liz, I want to move into talking about dragon riding and Kalimdor, and how you can now ride your dragon in Kalimdor. I know you've been able to ride dragons in Kalimdor before, but this is when it actually uses dragon riding. It's not just
right.
So
totally unique dragon.
That started today. I haven't played it. Quite frankly, I haven't had time to play World of Warcraft. What with all the other games I'm trying to play, Diablo 4, Baldur's Gate, Cyberpunk. Writing up Pathfinder campaign. I haven't had time yet. And you just said you hadn't gotten the time to do it yet. You guys are raiding tomorrow, right?
Kinda.
So you'll probably be online by tomorrow to do it, right?
I hope so. I might try it afterward, but I might play Diablo 4, and I might just go do nothing. Sometimes it's nice to do nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I am curious to see how this works, because as I've said before, I think this is a step into getting dragon riding after Dragonflight is over. Like, I think they're going to make dragon riding work in other places. So I mean, I'm curious for that. I'm also curious, like, you know, as you pointed out, I think it was you, Liz, but it might have been Joe. You've just fused into a two-headed ogre in my head. It's Liz, Joe. Joe, Liz. Joe, Liz? No, Liz, Joe. Liz, Joe makes more sense. But, like, the idea that Kalimdor wasn't designed to have dragon riding on it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that was me.
Yeah, you'd have to come up with ways to make it work within that milieu, within the places in Kalimdor you're flying to. Do we know, like, what the track is yet? Like, I mean, obviously we do. People have gotten to play it. Does anyone here know what the track is?
There are lots of them. There are a bunch of them all over the world. I need to actually find the post we did about them.
This is Joe. I love when Joe was basically sitting going, I'm going to have to cut more dead air out.
I have algorithms. It's fine.
Ah, well, that's good. That's good.
Algorithms, the cause of and solution to all of our problems. Okay, I've got the thing in front of me here. It's Fellwood Flyover in Fellwood, Nordrassil Spiral and Hyjal Hotfoot in Mount Hyjal, Rocketway Ride in Ashara, Durotar Tour in Durotar. Which makes sense, really. Why would you be doing the Durotar tour somewhere else? The Desolus Drift, again in Desolus, Razorfen Roundabout in the Southern Barrens, Feralas Ruins Ramble, in Feralas, Uldum Tour, Ashenvale Ambit, really Ambit? Okay, that's a ghost in Ashenvale. The Winter Wander is in Winter Spring. At least it's not the Winter Spring Wander. The Webwind Weave in Stone Talon Mountains. God, that reminds me of being like level 17 in Stone Talon, like back in the day. Do you guys remember that? My God, that was almost visceral.
Mm-hmm.
The Great Divide Dive in the Northern Barrens, Thousand Needles Thread, that's in Gadget Zan. No, Thousand Needles. The Ankaraje Circuit in the outdoor version of Ankaraje, south of Selithus, and the Ungoro Crater Circuit in Ungoro Crater. Those are the races. Go ahead.
I'm interested in this Ankaraje circuit. That seems like a really interesting setting to...
Because there's no trees!
Yeah, and
there are no trees, but there will probably be like ancient ruins to dodge around and under. They love that stuff.
I was actually thinking that because, you know, ever since they made the Cataclysm revamp and they actually put an outdoor version of Ankaraje, you can literally go in there and ride around in it, like right now. And obviously now you can race above it. I'm just wondering, like, you know, how much use they made of like the spires and so forth. That is pretty cool. I'm also kind of curious about the Ungaro Crater Circuit. Yeah.
Thousand Needles could be really fun too. It, like dodging between all of those columns over the water, maybe under the water. I mean, is that a thing that could be possible? It just seems like there's some interesting obstacles that they could throw at you.
Yeah, it is definitely a... I miss old Thousand Needles. I don't like the water being there, but you know, I'm an old folk. So
I still call the current edition of Orgrimmar New Orgrimmar, and I hate it. I hate it.
I don't like it because it looks like someone decided to steal dwarven architecture, but I don't know, ran it through the Brundlefly machine with like a ball of spikes or something, because it's just spiky everywhere and it doesn't look the way I imagine orcish stuff to look. It looks very Tolkien orc. Whereas I'd gotten an orc look from, like, you know, from Warcraft 3 and World of Warcraft's, you know, first few years, I had gotten a sense of orcish construction as being very tribal and bone and wood related and not all this grayish rock and iron everywhere. So yeah, I don't hate it, but I don't like it.
I hate it. I hate it. I'm on record. I hate it. I hate New Orgrimmar, even though it's been around longer than Old Orgrimmar at this point.
Yeah,
and then, I'm very sad. Very sad.
But in addition to that, I think at this point, unless there's something else, I usually forget some things and Liz has to throw them at me later. So
I read the email and I did not have anything to add. Wow. I really did not. I know. Dang.
I'm actually pretty impressed with myself right now. I'm giving myself a pat on my back.
It's an excellent job keeping track on all of the crap that's been going on, because it's nonstop with new things.
Yeah, I didn't want to forget this one because we had our own Annabelle wrote it up pretty comprehensively. But they're bringing account progression back into Overwatch. With Overwatch 2 is now going to have account progression feature, except it's more like 17 account progression features in a hat. Like, I don't know how else to explain this. Like, reading this article made me tired. Like, you know, did you guys read it? Like, Liz read it at some point.
I mean, you know, actually, I do not read all the articles. I read the ones I edit, but that's not necessarily all of them. But I did edit this one. So, I mean, it feels a little more like achievements, and you're earning things as you progress, and you like, you do this achievement, maybe you get a thing. Wow, I'm explaining this really badly. You can tell my limited enthusiasm for Overwatch. I enjoy achievements in video games. I enjoy collecting rewards. I enjoy filling the little bar. That's the thing that every game wants to push you to do. You fill the little bar, you do this 12 times and you fill the bar and you get an achievement and it feels good. It goes ding and you're really excited and you want to do it again. That's what this feels like. Anna was calling it progression, and it is, but it feels like achievements to me, which isn't bad, but it's definitely not like the character progression that we were originally promised for the PvE stuff that
I'm going to say this. Even though they had perfectly good reasons for not doing what they were originally talked about doing, I feel like in like a few years, there's going to be some kind of like special about Overwatch, and someone's going to ask somebody who was working there and go, yeah, we never recovered from the player, you know, backlash to us not having done that, because people are not letting it go. And I'm not saying this as someone who's let it go. I have not. But I feel like that's going to be like really disheartening as a, you know, when you're trying to make a game that you keep having to try to compete with the ghost of the game you didn't make.
Yeah.
And I mean, in this case, a lot of people wanted that game that you didn't make. And it's really kind of hard. Like, they bring this back, which is something people probably really wanted before, but now people are like, this isn't character progression. So yeah, it is fascinating to see how that thing just keeps lingering there.
And the thing is, I mean, Overwatch developers, they aren't bad people. It's not like they're trying to make a bad game or they're going out of their way to make a game that we don't want. They're all there working hard to make the best game they can. And that's not the game that the marketing people sold to us.
Yeah, I think
that's not their fault.
And it's also possibly not the game that got decided to be made by the people that are making the decisions.
Yeah, because the people who are making decisions changed radically. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, mm-hmm. like people who are currently making decisions in Overwatch, like, you know, are not the people who were doing so back in 2019 when they made a lot of promises. It is fascinating to think about, like, how the whole, you know, world descending into madness has lingering effects on Overwatch. Kind of like a objective correlative for that whole Omnic thing that they keep talking about. But yeah, I am not a big achievement person. So it's probably not a surprise that I'm like, come back to me when you finally release the pen and paper role-playing game for this. So I can just play that. You want to hear my shameful secret?
Okay.
I actually wrote a 20 page Overwatch splat book for the Mutants and Masterminds system like 2 years ago. It's laying around here somewhere in one of these folders. I actually have rules for like how to, you know, the whole thing. It's really depressing to admit this.
I don't see why that's a bad thing. Overwatch is so great. It has such a great story.
Well, the reason I did it was because we did that Mass Effect thing.
Yeah.
And I was thinking I could run an Overwatch game at some point. Uh-huh. But then, you know, it didn't happen because other things.
Yeah, there's always things like
life.
Happening.
That's life. Other things happening. Regardless, that is happening in Overwatch. So, yeah, we have now mentioned it. And what time is it? Oh, wow. We got through that much time.
We've almost burned through the entire podcast and like 70% was talking about Diablo.
Oh my God. I should have remembered. Thank God we can't talk about Baldur's Gate 3 on this show because it would be 9 p.m. It would be 9 p.m. right now. Okay. I'm going to do at least one question. So
okay.
I'm going to skip the usual question intro. We'll get to all that stuff at the end when we make Joe do the thing, because yeah, we've got a few questions here and I want to get at least one of them. What is your favorite heel turn? This one is from Tetsemi, by the way. What is your favorite heel turn in any game? And what is your favorite sequel / expansion in a game? I think we did this before, didn't we?
Think so.
So I'm going to skip it. Sorry. I felt like we'd done it before when I started reading it. So I'm going to read this one because this is the one I actually stole from Lore Watch, but I stole because Liz is only here for Blizzard Watch. Liz is not on our Lore Watches. So.
Okay, except for like the big four-part
Diablo. After finishing the Diablo 4 campaign, I've concluded that Lilith and Elizabeth Sobeck of the Horizon series have a lot in common. Both see a world headed toward destruction and decided that sacrificing the majority of humanity is the only way to save even a fraction of it. While Sobeck's goals are admittedly much more benign than Lilith's, both use cold, ruthless methods to get the job done. Your thoughts? Only slightly tongue-in-cheek. Belak of Dragonblight.
I love this. It's a great question. I'd never thought about this, but it's great. Yes. This is in a way the same thing, because Lilith is like, the Lords of Hell are coming. We've heard that line. We hear that line over and over. The Lords of Hell are coming, and we need to be ready. We need to be ready to stand against them. And if I have to wipe out half of humanity in order for the other half to be strong and ready to go, I am going to do that. And of course, Elizabeth Sobeck, spoilers for Horizon Zero Dawn. Okay, yeah, now you know, spoilers. She came up with this plan that it's like, okay, humanity cannot be saved. It cannot be saved. All we can do is make it possible for future generations to be saved. We are all dead, but future generations might still be saved with this plan. And she literally, you know, there's this huge military buildup where they are telling everyone, hey, it's going to be okay. You're fighting off these killer robots that are here to destroy us all. You're going to stop them. And all these people are doing is buying time for them to finish Zero Dawn, which is basically just preserving genetic material that will later be cloned and become new generations of humans. It's pretty dark. It's pretty brutal. And the big difference here is that Lilith is presented as a villain in Diablo 4. She's set up as a villain. She's set up as the bad guy. We are the people chasing after her. Everyone around us thinks she's a villain. And it's kind of set dressing, right? This is how it's framed. In Horizon, we follow Elizabeth Sobeck's story, and it's much more sympathetic. It's definitely showing her as a savior of humanity who is, you know, forced to make this hard and terrible choice in order to do it. Whereas Lilith, it's like, okay, she's saying this is what we need to do, but do we trust Lilith? Look at what Lilith is doing. It's all this bad stuff. She's killing all of these humans. All of these people are dying. Look at Lilith's corruption spreading. This is terrible. But, you know, Elizabeth Sobeck was also pushing everyone into this massive global war where she knew everyone was going to die, every last person. And so, yeah, what is the difference? The difference is framing.
I was going to say the difference is perspective and timing. Like, true, so maybe that is the framing, but like the difference between the two of them is in Horizon, you are discovering what happened, that what has already transpired. So you can look at it from a different lens, because you can look at it from, okay, here's where we are, here's how we got there, and here's why we got there. Whereas with Diablo, when we look at the past, it's not good. It's all terrible. Like there's a lot of bad stuff happening. But Lilith is this featured character who's only moving forward, and their motivations aren't known. Like, and at the time, Elizabeth Sobeck's motivations weren't known. And we have the benefit of knowing what those motivations were afterwards and looking at everything that she did through that lens, where we don't have that with Lilith. Lilith is moving forward, and there's a lot of death, a lot of destruction, there's a lot of horribleness in her wake. But think about the people that were living through those global wars that Elizabeth Sobeck was pushing everybody towards. How did the average person feel? Did they feel hope? Did they feel hopeless? Did they feel like they had no control over anything and were living in despair and under the dark thumb of some giant boogeyman? Because they kind of were. There's a lot of similarities where, you know, we are in that moment currently with everything that's happening in Diablo 4. So they are not dissimilar. It's just perspective and how you get to look at each character's actions that I think really tells the difference.
I suppose one big thing is we, in looking back at the history of Elizabeth Sobeck, we know what her motivations were. We have a good idea of what was, we know the end goal. We don't know Lilith's goal.
Yep,
we don't
exactly.
We can make guesses. We can make a lot of guesses, but we don't know. We don't know for sure. We don't know the end game of anyone here.
I feel like you guys are leaving out another pretty major difference, though.
Elizabeth Sobeck didn't have giant horns and giant wings and wasn't born with the blood.
Look at the antagonists Lilith has versus the antagonists that Elizabeth Sobeck had to deal with. Elizabeth Sobeck obviously had the Pharaoh plague to deal with, but they were more like a natural disaster. But there's the person that caused them, Ted Pharaoh.
That guy.
Ted Pharaoh is the worst person who ever existed. And he started off, like, it's actually really funny. As soon as I saw this question, I started thinking about Inarius and Ted Pharaoh. How both of them start off as these somewhat noble figures. Ted Pharaoh is known as the man who saved the world. That was what they called him from the 2040s to, like, you know, 2060s when, oopsie, his killer robots that he made that could absorb biomatter to keep him going. Oh, my God. I liked the scene you finally get to see, like, two-thirds of the way through the game where you find the recording of when he calls Elizabeth in. She's, like, she left the company, like, a decade earlier and started her own because she's just tired of working for him. And he calls her in. And he reveals to her just how bad things actually are. And she's like her, you could see her sitting there with it. Like, cause it's in the video, you see her, she's recreated. And then she goes, this is what we're going to do. You're going to give me everything. You're going to give me carte blanche. And if you don't, I'm going to go, the next place I go is going to be to NORAD to tell them what you've done. And he goes, you don't have to threaten me. And she's like, the look on her recreated face, you actually get to see it. It's blue and pixelated, but you get to see it. She looks at him like, if I didn't need you, I would kill you for this because you have doomed us. And you realize she knows in that exact moment, she knows that she cannot save the world. She can only create a way to recreate it. Like, she can make a crash, but she can't save the people that are there now. or the plants or the animals. Nothing alive on the earth at that moment. She can't save any of it. And she knows in that moment. He doesn't even understand it. He does not realize what he's done. And it's just fascinating to me because it's very much like Inarius sitting on his chair going, well, why don't we have a discussion about the Nephilim? We can talk about it and come up with a... Meanwhile, Lilith is out killing all the others because she's absolutely not going to let them kill the Nephilim. You know what I mean? Like, it is a fascinating thing. I don't think they are as similar as you guys are making them sound. I think that there's a difference. And one of the differences is that Elizabeth Sobeck sacrifices herself. She knows she's not going to make it either. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
Whatever Lilith's plan is, Lilith is going to be around at the end of it.
Hmm.
Whereas Elizabeth Sobeck knew full well, I'm not getting out of this. And when the seals weren't right on the last bunker that absolutely had to have them perfect, and if they weren't done properly, and the deviation meant that they were going to be discovered and it was all for nothing, she while the rest of the people were arguing about what to do, she walked out and sealed it from the outside and walked to her house knowing she was going to die. And that, to me, that's the difference.
Yeah. I can't argue with
it.
But
I do think there's a lot going on that's very similar in these two things. And that's why I felt like, you know, Joe, I am sorry I stole it, but I felt like Liz had to be here for this one.
Why were you sorry you stole it?
Because it was for Lorewatch. I told you that up front.
I don't care. I knew this needed Liz.
Yeah, absolutely. But
one day we need to do a big Horizon Lorewatch. Y'all have to play this so we can do the big Horizon Lorewatch, though.
Well, part two. We already did one.
Yeah. All the Horizon.
Yeah, we do have to do another one. But at this point, I am going to have Joe do the thing.
Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means that this podcast signing community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast with a queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Joe. Again, although not again, because I didn't do it before. if you have a question for the show, you can use our Discord. We have the Patreon Q and podcast question channel for patrons. And we love you guys. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And the Q and podcast questions channel for non-patrons, because you guys can support us in other ways, like going to YouTube or going to Spotify or wherever you listen to this podcast and doing things like recommending it to your friends, giving it a positive rating, all that kind of cool stuff. Algorithms are pretty much running our lives right now, and you can help us get those algorithms to show our stuff to more people, and that would be great of you. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. On behalf of myself, Joe, and Liz, thank you all very much for being here with us, and we will see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.